Go on and hit me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast, the Flats and Shanks podcast. I am the Flats part, Di Flats, and he is...
I'm the Shank Man dude, Shank the Tank, made up myself. You're right, David, it is our podcast because we haven't sold out to any corporates yet, have we? Any conglomerates?
Nah. We're not.
We're not like that, mate. Are we? We're not like that. No.
The offers have been there, haven't they? The offers have been there.
God.
You know what? We don't want to be controlled. We don't want to be controlled like that. And actually, more to the point, we don't want to have to go to London to do our podcast every week, which is why we said no.
It would be quite nice to retire now, though, wouldn't it? Which we probably could have done.
Yeah. You seen that video going around on WhatsApp of a representation by grains of rice of how much money Jeff Bezos, the Amazon boss, CEO, is worth.
Nope.
It is hilarious. It's like each grain of rice is $100,000. So like, here's three little grains of rice. That's your Lamborghini. And then it shows you his pile and it is hilarious. And he's got a new house worth $145 million. So there's a little pile. That's his house.
Mm.
And then it's next to this massive stack of rice. And this guy's counted out every individual grain of rice. And it's like, but does he own his own podcast? Yes, he probably does.
I didn't see it, mate, because me no get an agenda. But send it on. Make a nice change from the other stuff you send on WhatsApp.
Andy Hazel sent me that, Gloucester legend, okay. One of the greatest of all time, Cherry and White, he sent me that. He loves that kind of stuff. So the podcast thing's an interesting one because everyone's got a podcast now, fella. But we were the originals. We were the first podcast in the whole world. Did you know that?
I'm trying to think of people that don't have a podcast because it's really difficult. Yeah, exactly.
Johnny Wilkinson hasn't got one.
Well, is he part of the Vitality podcast? He probably is.
I remember when we got a call from that brand, we won't say their name in case we get into trouble, but they said, we would like to offer you 30 minutes with Maro Itoje on your podcast if you would like to drive to Twickenham on Tuesday afternoon. It was like, I've got a job. Shanks has got a job at this point. I had a job at that point. You had a job. It was like, we have to take half a day's unpaid leave, drive there for 30
full
minutes.
Full day, mate.
And we're at full day, of course. And we're like, no, we can just call him and get him on, thanks. We're one of the lads. Still haven't had him on.
Worst thing about...
We never asked him, like, but we should do.
The worst thing about going to Twickenham, I always think, is that people have different ways to get to Twickenham. Now, you live on the M4, same as me. I just live a little bit further down. Now, I go M3 and I cut across Bracknell. Right, so I come on the M4. I think you get off at Junction 9, you cut across Bracknell, come down the M3 straight into Twickenham.
Of course you do.
The problem with coming home though is that you pass a petrol station which has got Waitrose in, lovely. It's a Shell one. Right next door is a KFC. And when you get out of the car to fill your car up, because it's always a good place to stop, it's not too busy, the smell hits you. And I find it very difficult to say no. And I box the chimp on my shoulder, mate. It's the chimp paradox.
Yeah.
And the chimp wins. Sometimes I'm good and I take a little bit of the skin off and just eat the pure chicken, protein. Yeah, real good chicken. Love the adverts from KFC. Ah, oh, nice bit of chicken here. Bash it together. Yeah, put in a little bit of breadcrumbs. Ah, oh, it's good for you. That's what they portray. But
thing is, do you know why I'm so lucky?
Because you don't
I'm
put weight
up
on?
For it. I just can't put weight on the mat. What I eat, the smell of KFC makes me think of food poisoning.
A bad experience.
I haven't.
Tenerife?
I have not had a bad experience. My body thinks it has, but it hasn't. So I went to Wagamama's years ago and I got I had Wagamama's tempura prawns and I was spewing all that night. And I've been back to Wagamama's since, but I think the feet, you know, when something's poisoned you never want it again. Like a dog, like you learn. For some reason, the smell of the tempura prawns is so similar to KFC that I can't go in there. So I've skipped that. Mind you, I did have a drive-through Mackie D's on Tuesday.
Welcome back.
It was a treat for the kids, boys. It was a treat for the kids. And it was like, look, do you know what? Because they walked into town on Sunday to go. They wanted to go to Starbucks. They don't really want coffee or milkshake. They want one of the plastic Starbucks cups that someone had on TikTok or something. They're
don't talk to me
TikTok,
about plastic, mate.
I know they were shut, luckily. So they were very disappointed. They didn't get their little shaky thing. So I said, right, we will go. and you can have one burger and a bag of carrots.
How did you get a drive-through then if you walked into town?
No, they walked in to get a Starbucks cup, and Starbucks was shut on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Or on the Monday, rather. So on Tuesday, to make up for it, I took them for a Mackie D's drive-through, and it was ace.
Mm, what do you have?
And I had a Big Mac meal. Do you know what I find? I find people on Twitter, and a lot of them are joking, but I find them hammering people for like queuing up for McDonald's, and people were like idiots, because there was this picture when Fungal, of the big queue when Bath Mackie D's opened up.
Yeah.
And I was like, look at these idiots. I understand if you're clogging up the A4, it's a bit annoying for a drive-through. Look at these muppets, like, finally lockdown's easing and the first thing I want to do is a McDonald's. It's like, it's nothing to do with McDonald's, mate. It's just something fun and easy and different. And
I tell you what it is, mate. It's having some food where you don't have to cook for yourself.
Or clear up.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It just, you know.
And it's a treat. It's a, like, we have them now and again as a treat for the kids, you know.
Yeah.
You're allowed a McDonald's today. Yay, yay. And it's something different, isn't it? From cooking in your house, and it tastes good. And yeah, right, it's not great for you, but we're not having them every day.
And you can feed a family of 14 for £7.60. Admittedly, it's not actual food. Do you know what is what was really noticeable was something I noticed a couple of years ago, because I used to now and again drop in on the way back from the Rico or whatever and think, oh, go on then. Martin Bayfield said to me that he got to a point where he had 3 Mackie D's in a day. His breakfast, lunch and dinner
were all
Mackie D's.
I've done it.
Road.
Mostly on stag do's.
Yeah, yeah. But he said he just felt so exhausted at the end of that day because he had no real fuel in him. I noticed that I was driving home, feeling fine, grabbing a drive-through Mackie D's and then feeling really sleepy. And it was when I pulled off the motorway to sleep because I couldn't keep my eyes open that I realised, oh my God, I reckon it's this food. So we had Mackie D's. An hour and a half, 2 hours after the Mackie D's, I am falling asleep. My eyes are closing on the sofa at home and the kids have slumped into their worst moods of lockdown. We were looking at each other, like the grown-ups looking at each other like, oh my God, I said this might happen. They completely fell away. Like, it's the worst afternoon they've had.
Had the crash.
In terms of mood. Yeah, properly crashed. Yeah. So it's obviously just really bad gear that we ate. But
yeah,
so
like it's like you can leave a burger, can't you, for years and years, and you'll open it and it'll look exactly the same. And your stomach's got to digest that. Before I forget, Flats, right, I've had a message from Ross Harris.
Ross Harris.
You know our friend Ross Harris.
Harris, yeah.
Likes everyone. You know, doesn't have any enemies whatsoever. And for me, I can't fully trust him for that. You've got to have enemies. There's got to be people you don't like.
Yeah. He's a Labrador in chinos.
And I was just having a think, just before we come on this podcast, of people I don't like. And there's a few, and you might want to add to this list. Now I thought of slow playing golf. Hate that. That's one of my biggest hates. So don't like that. Slow drivers. You agree with me there? And I'm not talking about people who was going over the speed limit, but way under the speed limit. You know, they're going 25 miles an hour in a 40 zone. You're like, what?
I had a 35 and a 60 yesterday, fella.
Yeah.
20 minutes.
Exactly, mate.
It's not right.
People who are queuing for drinks as a group of people, but then decide to buy all their drinks individually. And sometimes their cocktails. It takes forever. I'm like that. Oh, why don't you just chip it together, guys? And you can get a big round and then he's done. Elderly people at airports.
Don't like him, do you?
At airports.
You don't like the elderly?
Going through airport security. Got no time for that.
Oh, come on. Nana and granddad going on holiday.
All right, but surely you've been on a plane before, right? We're in the 21st century now. Surely you know you've got to take everything off. Not all your clothes, but your phone's got to come out your pocket. Your belt's got to come off. You know, and it's not just elderly people. You know, it's all types of people, but they are the worst. And I'm just stood behind. I've got everything out. I've got my iPad in a separate case, ready, straight through. People humming as well, I thought.
Okay.
Why hum? Why hum? You know,
that
going
is,
up an escalator, I mean, going like this.
That's the grump. It's the maddest you've been this.
I'm like,
tough week, isn't you?
No, great week, mate. Same as every.
Tell you what, I like this. This is a like one. This is a like people who say you're on the phone to them, or you're standing at a counter waiting for something, or you go to Screwfix and you say, "Mate, you got one of these plugs," and the the whoever it is behind the counter plugs it in. Let's have a look, and they go da 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 da. Like they can't, the uncomfortable silence. I like that. Tell you what, I don't mind old people. Look, the reason slow drivers are one. My main bugbears are there are two. One is the slow driver, same as you. I don't mind someone doing 50 and a 60. Get over it. We're all grown ups. Not going to get you there that much quicker doing 61. But 35 and a 60, 40 and a 60, I think, well, first of all, I think they don't know the speed limit. So chill out. When I was a bit younger, I probably would have tried to race past them and be a bit of a knob about it. Now, yesterday, I was like, well, it's not their fault, but you're going past signs with national speed limit signs every so often, and it tells you. And you go through a village, they're doing 35 in a 30, and then it's like national speed limit, and their speed doesn't change. Mm. And I've got my little kids in the back. I'm not going to start overtaking. So it's like normally I would ease past them, but there was no way. And I this is actually quite antisocial. If I was a police, I often dream about being a policeman, flashing the lights and saying, look, you're not in trouble, but do you know how slow you're going? You're going to force somebody at some point will get impatient and will overtake you, and it could when they shouldn't.
Yep.
Or they might do. So sort it out. Also, middle lane hogs, they're my number one by a mile.
Okay, yeah.
I'm a flasher. I'm a proper flasher of middle lane hogs because they're getting it wrong.
Mm.
Oh, found something out this week on that subject. I thought I got told it at a speed awareness course. I did, but people keep telling me I'm wrong when I mention it. But turns out it was right. It was correct information. You indicate to overtake on a motorway. You don't indicate left on a motorway. Because it's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to just overtake and pull straight back to the left. So when you indicate right, fine, but then you just drift to the left. And that's why you're not allowed to undertake, because every car to the right of you should be able to drift left. Mm. Without, you know, they've got to look, but you don't have to indicate left.
Okay.
On a motorway.
There you are.
Okay.
Get 3 points if you do. But anyway, we diverse a little bit, but Ross Harris, right?
Yeah, sorry.
Our friend, you know, saw him once flat with his top off, as just before we were sort of getting changed to go on air for Premier Sports. Incredibly moly. Doesn't look like it, but proper, you could have a proper dot to dot on his back.
Lucky bloke.
If you go past the hair. Little beard dandruff as well. But anyway, his book.
Beardruff, I get that.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah.
His book, Behind the Dragon, which I've done a little bit with as well. Thank me later. Has been shortlisted for Rugby Book of the Year for The Telegraph.
Brilliant.
Mm. Mm.
Brilliant. What's it about?
I'm not actually sure. Mm, I think it's about music, I think, mate.
Oh, good on him.
It's actually a decent read. From it's very diverse in loads of different rugby players throughout the year, has given you their look on the Welsh team and rugby.
Yeah.
He's done all right.
Well done, Ross Harris.
Mm.
Excellent. Yeah, that's good news. Good on him. I read a poem that a friend of mine wrote.
You read poems?
I didn't read a poem. No, got sent it on WhatsApp. I don't actually read poetry. You know, leave that to clever people. But never really got into that. But my friend, a friend who wrote a book a few years ago and won awards for it, she has written a poem, and it is really, really good, and it's going to get published into a kid's book. But it got me thinking, you and I have got to do a kid's book.
Mm.
Gus and Fred, Pet Detectives, mate. We wrote the draft. We had a draft. I had a draft. I sent it to my mate Alex Barton, who listens to this pod. He's one of the most obnoxious people I've ever met, but a nice guy. And he, his wife Chloe is an editor, so I sent it to her about 3 years ago and never heard back. So I hope, presumably, it's not very good. But there we are.
Do you do a draft like Max and Paddy, Magnet and Steel? Is it like that?
Yeah,
little drawings.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Flats, we've got a couple of guests on today. Now we are going pretty quick through the time here, and we've got to make sure that we get them in. First up, we have Lou Reed. I'm not sure you've heard too much of Lou Reed, but larger than life, he's actually a massive bloke as well. Played second row, Scarlets mostly, the Blues as well. I think 5 Welsh caps, I believe. I mean, I probably should know this, but as I'm speaking through this introduction very slow, I'm also Wikipedia-ing him. And it's, 5 appearances for Wales from 2012. So he's going to come on now. this is a funny bloke, right? A little bit nervous. We had to write out a few questions to ask him, but
big man's nervous, is he?
In terms of characters, he's up there with Pauly. All right.
Yep.
So he's going to come on, and also you've lined up someone else, haven't you? So we're
we're getting double bubble today.
We're
getting the man. We're getting Hambo on. Matt Ampson's coming on. We're going to talk to Hambo about his foundation, about the Get Busy Living Centre, about what lockdown has done for him. What's it? What it's done for his charity? Has it stopped them raising money? Has it stopped them helping people? Is he looking forward to a bit of rugby coming back? The one thing about Hambo is that he's Leicester Tigers through and through. And because you and I are so neutral, you know, we've got a balanced view on things. But you know what these Leicester mutes are like, you know. So he's a bit of a Leicester Tiger. Yeah. And, you know, just they're difficult to get on with, except the fact that they're not. They are. And the worst thing is, like, you get when you get to know, like, Tom Youngs and Dan Cole and Tom Croft and Jono and those guys, it's like the killer, the absolute killer is that they're all really, really nice. And you, but they were very, very easy to dislike on the field. I'll say that. Mm. They're all really nice. And, but Hambo's not like that. He's horrible. So we'll get him on and we'll get stuck into him.
Right. It's time to call the big man. See, we got him, Flats.
We got him.
Fourth time lucky now in this recording, because where he lives, I don't think they have any Wi-Fi. Lou Reed, great to have you on. How are you, big man?
Yeah, great. Thank you very much. Yeah, sorry about the Wi-Fi, boys. I do live in a little valley, and we struggle up here sometimes to get connection for everything. So I'm doing all right. Thanks, boys. Great to be on.
Yep.
How's lockdown? Are you getting through all right?
Yeah. Yeah, lockdown's been good to me. You know, as far as being locked up and having to work from home, we've managed it quite well. We've got childcare, we've got our health, and, you know, I'm doing well compared to a lot of people, so I'm really happy with it.
That's good. That's good. I mean, I kind of wanted you to be a bit more smug about it, so that we could publicly shame you, because that is quite fashionable at the moment.
Yeah.
Before, are you like one of these? I'm going to ask you about your job in a minute, but are you one of these ex-pros that Chris Hoy mentioned this thing on TV once called detraining? So like when you've been a pro for years, you've got to detrain. You can't just stop. You've got to train yourself out of it for like a year or so. I didn't do that. Have you done that? Are you still in great shape, or are you actually a bit of a mess now?
I've never been in great. I was when I was in great shape. I'm sort of like, no offense, but to Tony Bellew, I'm a similar shape to Tony Bellew, I think. You know, when you train as much as you want, when you don't see a muscle or a vein, I'm one of them. I had 6 months off once with a broken ankle, and I did bench press and chins for 6 months, and nothing happened to me.
You didn't even get stronger.
No, I didn't even. I was still swinging around like a big orangutan.
Do you know, Lou, do you know a Welsh prop called Aaron Jarvis?
Yeah, Jarvis, yeah.
You know Jarvis. So Jarvo and I played for quite a few years together at Bath, and we did this thing, they fitness test you on basically day three of pre-season or something, and you've got your heart rate monitor on and your GPS, and they've got your figures, and they say, right, this is your max. You are at 100% effort or 96% effort, whatever it is, and you've achieved this. So we did 8 weeks of pre-season, and then 2 weeks before the season started or whatever, we did testing again just to see where we were. Mm. And I remember Jarv was 104, and I was 106% effort. So we basically tried even harder than we had before, and our results were exactly the same to the second on the fitness test. It was like, you have done 8 weeks and nothing has changed. Nothing. Yeah. So something just happens, doesn't it?
Have you you got a little garage converted into a gym? I haven't seen any sessions posted online.
Nah,
are you?
Nah. The one thing I did do is I did 1,000 miles in May on a watt bike.
Off of Lindra.
Yeah, so I did that.
Oh, well done.
I cracked on with that. And to be honest, I didn't lose any weight either. So I don't know what's going on with my body.
That's because you had chomp bars tucked into your light, Chris.
I know. That's the thing. I took the old new, you know what, these cyclists, you see them all with their gels and stuff. I took that to the extreme, and I was necking pints of Coke and stuff to get me through it.
I've done a cycle from North Wales to South Wales, whatever, for charity. Again, forget about it. And when you're cycling, you have this misconception that you can just eat whatever you want. And it was hot as well. So there's Monster Munch, sweets non-stop. I put on weight. somehow I put on weight. I looked down and I thought, after 4 days, I thought, well, I'm going to at least see an ab. Saw nothing. Saw a few little rolls. And I thought, that's it. I'm giving up cycling now.
Well, it's like, boy, a few years ago, and I did Jono. I don't want to go on about it, lads, but I did Jono Groats to Land's End.
Yeah,
I've done the world, mate. Hills. I've done the world.
So we did 998 miles in 9 days. I don't want to go on about it, but camping on the floor. And I started the event at 123 kilos and I finished it at 123 kilos on the nose. And they're like, yeah, but it's the weeks afterwards you really burn it off. 1 week afterwards, I was 123. A week after that, I was 125. So 1,000 miles in 9 days, it doesn't work. It's like, the reason cyclists, I think you've got to do it for years and years and years, but we're just not meant to do it. Anyway, what's your job now, Lou? What are you doing?
I work in the medical, I'm a medical rep. I work for a company called Aureus Medical, a big German company. It sells bone cement into hospitals in South Wales, Swindon, Cheltenham, Gloucester, Hereford.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you're in a car you don't quite fit in because you're a giant and you're doing about 40,000 miles a year on the M4.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. Eating and drinking whatever I like on the way up the M4.
Like when you turn up to hospitals and you're going in there to work and to show people the products, do you get any funny looks from nurses, from doctors thinking, oh, hi sir, what are you in for?
Yeah, usually I get, well,
your head again.
Believe it or not, right, I've hit my head plenty of times walking at these hospitals, but believe it or not, there's loads and loads of rugby boys doing this job. So they're all, you will walk through a hospital in whichever place you are, and it'll be a big giant walking towards you and looking the same as well. So I don't think it's one of them industries where sports people seem to get drawn to, and especially in Wales, you can see Garth Llewellyn or Mark Lewis, who you'd know, Shanks.
Yeah.
You know, all these boys are walking towards you, so they do see big men every day, innit?
Do you have to be careful about like what you're talking about, because there's, you know, essentially people dying around you, and you're chatting about this time you had a late tackle on someone in a derby game?
yeah, it is like that. And in hospitals, you've got to be. I am always, worried about what I say in general, let alone in work. But especially in hospitals, because people go there to people are born and then people die and you don't really know what people's days are going like. So I usually head to Costa first to gather my thoughts.
give you super energy.
and kill off an hour and put on expenses. Here's one, right? So a bloke I used to play rugby with turned into basically like a power lifter, right? He's absolutely enormous. And he's also a doctor. And every now and again, he'll send a picture on whatever. And it's him in his like, I don't know what you call it, doctor's uniforms, his blue, papery kind of stuff they wear.
Theme night.
And it doesn't fit him. He looks absolutely ridiculous at work. So he has to cut slits for his biceps and cut slits for his calves and stuff in this kit. So do you ever have to dress up, or are you allowed to wear your civvies?
No, you've got to dress up. I wear Crocs and I wear big size 14 Crocs and then I wear these little blue, like you say, it looks like a bed sheet really, but they're never really long enough for me and they're never big enough, so I do look like a cheeky girl hopping on the place.
I suppose the most positive thing there is that you already had the Crocs, so you didn't have to
spend... I got a good stash of Crocs, so ready to go.
Yeah, exactly.
We should talk about your time in rugby now. You start off with the Scarlets. Now, I assume you had plenty of fun there, especially the era you were there, but who would be one of the players, Lou, that you would have looked up to as a kid, athletically?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun at the Scarlets because it was professional at the time. But I think being at Stradey Park and academies just being sort of toyed with, we were still sort of on the edge of being professional, but not doing anything professional, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like as in you'd go to an away trip and it'd be a game on a Saturday, but you would have flown out on the Friday, so you'd have a day in a hotel with the boys after a little team run. You'd have a game and then you'd have a good crack after that type of thing.
Yeah.
So when I first started with the Scarlets, I was instantly taken under the wing of Vernon Cooper. Mm. And he was exactly how I imagined my life being at the time that he was. So I thought to myself, I'll stick with Vern because he seems to have plenty of fun on and off the field.
Yeah, yeah. I remember doing hill sprints with him in Pyle. And yeah. It was, you know, you run for a certain amount of time, then you jog back, and he went missing for about half hour. You need to shit in the woods. We run up this hill, and he just comes out this tall grass, like he was an army soldier or someone from the SAS. Where have you been? He's like, need the toilet. I had to go. But sensible, though. Really sensible. Well, you've got about half hour running.
Do you remember Shanks, like Lou, that we played, Shanks and I played at Sarries years ago together, and we had a young fly half who was in his first pre-season called Matt Leakey, and two things stand out about Leakey. One is that Shanks had a punch-up with him in Tenerife. Yeah. And one, he reckons, Leakey says the same. But the other thing was that before we did our first, we had this Monument Hill, I think it was called, this horrendous hill sprints. It wasn't really sprints, it was just uphill runs. They were horrendous, we were going to do. And he came into the kitchen. I was like, mate, have you had your protein shake yet? And he's like, no. I was like, mate, go have your shake before we leave. Well, before we run, yeah, mate, everyone's had a shake. Quick, do it, because they'll go nuts if you haven't done it. Yeah, I've got it. Yeah. He quickly went into the kitchen, made this big shake with loads of bananas in it and protein powder, chopped a fucking litre, a pint of this protein shake, just shot, let's go. Got in my car, drove him down there, run three, Spewville. He was running and spewing at the same time. Still being
the thing is, so, if you're spewing or you're doing a number two, then, you know, you're able to get out of the session. You're able to have a little break.
Yeah. Yeah,
Who was you're good mates obviously with Bradley Davis.
Yeah.
Competition as well for places, both played second row.
Has
he always been your mate, or you know, was this a friendship that sort of developed later on in life?
We've always really schoolboy rugby really. He was from one end of the valley, I was from the other, and I sort of heard about him and I play against him, and obviously, it'd be a bit of bite there, but as soon as we met each other, really, we sort of, I don't know, the feelings of hate towards him because of rugby went really, really quickly. And I really struggled to play against Bradley, to be honest. I know people say, oh, you should, you know, hate your opposition or whatever. There are people I've hated, but Bradley certainly was never one of them.
Yeah, it's difficult to hate people you like, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I don't know Bradley Davis well, but I did a few things with him when he was at Wasps and then a few things when he's with the Wales camp. And he basically was like, and I say this as a compliment, an enormous child. Yeah, like, he was just dicking about the whole time. Like, he just wouldn't stop. And he was great value, great value. Here's a question for you. When you look back on your career, you hear like people like super achievers like Gary Neville, Tom Shanklin, who talk about their career and all the trophies they won. Are you like me? Because I didn't win many trophies. I say trophies aren't everything. They're memories. Memories are what I look back on. And if I'd won 10 trophies, I might talk about it, but I didn't. So I look at it, I look back and I think, I'm sure you won more than I did, but I look back and think, well, actually, it's the friends I made and the memories I made. Are you the same as me, or are you a sort of a Gary Neville type who all that matters is the trophies you won?
Nah, I'm like you. You know, it's for me. I don't think really about what I've won or games I've lost or things I've done. It's just all about who's with me now and the people that I'm still close with because of the way I was through my career. You know, I think I've got more kit men friends than rugby players because I was always in the kit man's fucking little dugout drinking coffee with them or something. You know,
yeah,
or a little cleaner in the club or something. I'd always just pull up a poo and have a chat to them. That was. You know, rugby for me was it was awesome. Well, I loved playing and all that, but I also enjoy just being around loads of men.
I know the feeling. As Shanks says, if you can't, you know, draw a picture of all your friends' genitals, then you're doing it wrong.
I know.
But I'm like you. I've obviously got mates that I played with, but one of my best mates from my playing days at Bath is Jerry the Chef, Jerry Quinn. We go out riding our motorbikes like losers and we have a really good time. See him a lot. Kitman Middy lives a couple of streets up. See him all the time. It's funny, isn't it? It's like, you're friends with sort of the lads, but there's also a lot of other people that work there that you... Because it's actually, anywhere, you work anywhere. It's like, it could be like the Fast Show. You could have an episode of the Fast Show on the bloke that runs the car park on match days because he's always mad.
Yeah.
He's always oddball. And it's like he thinks he's running Brexit, you know.
Yeah.
We saw a guy called Ray. And he sort of flitted around really the arms park. Sometimes he'd be on car park duty, other times he'd be buttering the bread with a fag in his mouth. sandwiches later on in the day. But I mean, you're talking about memories there, Lou, but yeah. You know, you've still got 5 Welsh caps. You know, so massive achievement there. But what was your time like in Welsh camp? I mean, did you have any deep conversations with Gats or Sean? Could they understand you?
Yeah, well, my time in Welsh camp is a lot different to most people's, and I can't really jazz it up much, to be honest, because I was always the opposition team for a long, long time. I was always, you know, if it was Ireland, I would be rolled out as
Ron O'Gara.
I'd be Ron O'Gara, and I try and take on
Simon Gagan.
I was more of a Leo Cullen, to be honest with you. No,
oh, my dad.
You know, and it was you know, I was never really involved in the squad until someone was injured. Like, so I would always hang around the fringes of it all. And when I'd ask Gats questions or Sean questions, it'd be, you know, have a look who's in front of you, sort of thing. And you know, I was in an era of Welsh rugby where I had Luke Charteris, Alan Wynn, Bradley Davis, you know, Ian Evans, all Ryan Jones was flittering into the second row and back row, so you could cover both. So I was in the middle of something that I don't think Wales has ever seen before with an abundance of second row. So I knew my, I just concentrated on trying to be, no, when you don't get picked and something, you can be a bit of a dick about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I always used to just, you know, try and keep my head together and have a good laugh with people in the team room. And I think they used to be confused about why I was so happy about not being picked, you know?
Yeah.
Because I always tried to keep a level head about where I was and you know, I never let it get me, really.
Do you remember your first cap? I'm sure you do, but what do you remember about it?
I was in the squad from the when I turned up at the squad. I knew straight away Alan Wynn was injured. He'd done his toe in at the time. Bradley was injured. So looking around, I was like, oh, here we go. This is the time it's going to happen, you know. And it did. I got capped against Scotland. I had 7 minutes at the end of the game. And if you watch it, it was the maddest 7 minutes of my life. I chased everything. I tackled everything. I even had a turnover. And
well done.
But the night out was, you know, when I got picked to Wales, I always imagined walking into walkabout after the game.
Yeah.
That's just the way I was. Like, it was never anything else than that, really. I imagine playing for Wales and going out to Cardiff in walkabout and having the country sort of embracing me as a hero.
Finding a future wife, like.
And it happened as well, because I went into walkabout that night and, you know, I didn't put my hand in my pocket.
I've said this before, Lou. I remember you struck up a strange friendship with Gethin Jenkins, because I say it's strange because it bloody is. You know, he's like a moody, grumpy, doesn't want to speak, and you're complete opposite. But he's not been playing before because he's been injured. Mm. Yet he's come out after on a night out and put on his full number ones to make it look like he's part of the squad.
No.
Mate. Relentless. But
amazing.
How do you and Geth get on? I mean, how do you meet? How do you form a friendship? Because so many boys text me saying it's just bizarre. But opposites attract.
I can imagine because I've had people in the squads, you know, spending time with him, and he is grumpy, he is miserable. I don't know, really.
Has he got a really sensitive side as well that we don't know about?
Let me give you a little insight into it then. So I went to the training camp in Poland with Wales, which was absolutely brutal. I can't describe it any other way. It was early mornings, late nights, training, no junk food, which I really enjoyed junk food, and there was nowhere to get junk food. But my mother had packed dairy milk, fruit and nut in my bag. A share bar, and one night Gethin was my roommate. Gethin was my roommate, and when you get the roommate lists, everybody's like, "Oh yeah, I'm with him," or "No, I'm with him." And I just picked the list up. I looked at Gethin, he looked at me. We didn't really say much, and I got to the room after about 4 days. You know, there was still no break of character from him. He was still sitting there, sort of mumbling to himself, and you know, doing his old thing. And then one night, we were both broken after rugby. I cracked open this bar of dairy milk, fruit nut, put it in the middle of the beds, and the next thing you know, I'm telling you, that tough exterior, like this, the way he is, it definitely changed when I pull that chocolate bar out, and he has got a beautiful smile.
It sounds like the Wrigley spearmint gum advert where you're on a bus and he pulls it out as his last one. He shares it with a girl opposite.
It was a bit surreal, but yeah, and don't forget, I couldn't get away from it. The experience of the guy, I needed him to show me how to be around this international environment because I was just a bit, like you say, Bradley's a big kid. I'm just the same. And I was walking around. I didn't really understand that training camp was basically a test to see if I could cope.
Yeah. A mental test.
Did you pass it? Did you pass the test?
No, I got dropped on the last day.
You and Nugget both got cut.
Yeah, we got cut. Yeah,
I had this thing like, I don't know if you ever had some of this, but it was like, because I was always dicking around as well and having a laugh and whatever. And it's like, I wanted to play, you know, but I got a lot of injuries. But there were also times when I was fully fit and wasn't picked. That's the reality of it. So it's like, I was around and I was dicking about and it's like, they haven't picked me and I'm gutted and go out to training and warm up and get through it and fire in. Then afterwards at dinner, it's like, why am I going to sit and sulk? Like, I'm not going to sit with the lads and sulk. I'm going to enjoy my life and enjoy my career. And then we had they used to have these stats. So you had your GPS and your heart rate and stuff. And it, again, same thing. It was basically like output level stats. And it was like, this is how hard this person has tried today, basically. So what they did was they gave us what they called, they said, this is going to be a 9 out of 10 session or a 10 out of 10 session. It's going to be very, very difficult. It's going to be long, a lot of fitness. And they basically had, I forget who was at the top. I think it was, it might have even been one of his really early sessions. Stefan Armitage and I were right at the top of basically it. You couldn't quite work out whether it's who's tried the hardest or who's found it the hardest, basically. It was a similar thing. And I basically got taken aside by one England coach and said, you need to stop dicking around. You're just happy to be here having a laugh. And it's about getting picked. And I remember saying, mate, look at the wall. Like, I am trying my ass off. I literally could not try anymore. I thought my eyeballs were going to pop out. I've scrummaged really well. I've lifted well. My running's got love done really, really well. And he goes, you've always got an answer for everything, haven't you, you smart Alec? I was like, well, okay, you're telling me I'm not trying. The proof is there that I am, and you're calling me a smart ass and sending me home. So it's like, I sometimes wonder if I should have just kept quiet. But
I remember getting knocked down a peg or two when we were young at Saracen's flat. And I remember we used to have Tim Wright and Yatesy. So Tim Wright was like assistant coach. Yatesy was fitness coach. And We're messing around at lunchtime, sat down, having a laugh. I'm in the middle of telling a joke, so I'm flying, I'm sharp. And Yatesy comes out and says, oh, Shanks, can you come in and have a meeting at 12:45? I said, mate, can you make it 12:45? And he goes, just looks at me, right? And I go in there and I'm like laughing around and stuff. And they go, Shanks, you're amazing at table tennis, but we're going to put you out on loan. I'm like that, whoa. just because attitude wasn't great. Basically I didn't change. Just got selected in the first team because of an injury and they couldn't do anything about it.
But yeah, it's true.
I took me by surprise.
Yatesy and Wrighty did that to me as well. They got me into Yatesy's little office
and
said, you bowling around like, you know, and it's like,
it's a chance. You're number one at table tennis, not at rugby. What's going on?
Yeah, but I was like, it was weird because I was 18, and I was getting picked every week, right? First of all, got picked because there was injuries. Then they were legitimately picking me. I only played about 10 games, and they're like, you're bowling around here like you own the place. I was like, no, I'm not. I said, I'm just having fun. Like, yeah, you're not going to be in the team much longer. I was like, okay. I remember saying in the meeting, I looked at Tim Wright. I said, you gave me man of the match on Sunday. No, but you've always got an answer. Like, okay, you're telling me I played really well. Like, okay, everything's fine. So it's knocked you down a peg or two. And then Matt Powell, this scrum half we used to play with, he used to do this thing to Yatesy where he walked past his office and he just poked his head in and said, 2 minutes, yeah, Yatesy? And Yatesy never knew what he meant. He said, yeah, sure, okay, fella, yeah. Walked in and goes, Yatesy, 2 minutes, yeah, back with you. And he's like, yeah, okay, fella. And he got out, apparently walked out, got in his car and drove home after lunch. But I just pissed myself and they told me to get out. Like, get out.
Okay. What, have you any bollockings from coaches, Lou?
Yeah, more or less. Every coach I've been under, and I'll say bollocking, but they'd say, you know, like you say, you're always dicking about it. I just think what I sort of got out of it in the end was I don't think they like players having attention. Because I always used to get like a circle. Like in the Blues, especially the Scarlets, I was a bit more sheepish because, you know, I had to work my way into the ranks a bit, and I wouldn't dare go up against some of the old heads. But in the Blues, I sort of had a, it was a corner where after training, we used to go in and sit and talk about how shit everything was. And I got pulled up a few times down the Blues just saying, look, they sort of, the conversation goes, we're not asking you to change who you are, but you need to change who you are. That was the sort of comments I used to get a lot, you know?
And it's fine when you're winning, but, you know, when you're losing, you know, you're not, you know, it's like they wanted you to change your personality, but, you know, your personality is your personality. I mean, you know, you were sort of groomed in a way by, in a personality way by Vernon Cooper. So, you're always going to be sort of larger
also,
than life.
You are who you are, and it's like you can't expect everyone to be Johnny Wilkinson and be massive output. No, it doesn't take any managing because he's just the best. He's just a wonderful bloke, but you're never going to get 40 of those. But I remember, Lou, you know, like being told by Phil Keith Roach, who's the old England scrum coach, saying, don't change who you are. You'll never forgive yourself. Just enjoy your time here. But then going on, getting a phone call from the England management saying, we're not going to take you on this trip because we think you're too busy dicking around on TV and all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So I fired back a bit and they were like, okay, you're right. We understand your point. These are men I've played with, you know, good. They were kind of mates, you know, and I was like, you know me better than that. And they take me on the tour. And after the tour, the end of the tour, I have a chat with the England coaches and they're like, you know, Flats, we're really impressed. I was 30 by this point and they're really good blokes. They were really impressed with your attitude. And, you know, when we're doing full contact and breakdown, you were the first to put your hand up and stick your head in. I was like, mate, we all do that. I've been doing that since I was 18. This isn't new. Yeah, but sometimes you can get the impression that you're just dicking around. I was like, no, I'm not, without sounding like a nut, I'm not bench pressing 200 kilos because I'm dicking around, because I work my ass off. I'm not still here after all these surgeries because I'm dicking around. I'm working my ass off. I just like to have fun. And I think some coaches can be a bit guilty. We all can, of just wanting everyone to slot into a certain personality type, but it doesn't work, does it?
No, definitely not. I'm the same though. I would always have these meetings with coaches about, oh, change this, change that. And don't get me wrong, if it was from a performance perspective, and I would try my best to alter things. But the same coaches then have pulled me in and said, everyone's a bit down, you know, can you know, sort of have a little pep talk before training and say something to pick us up? So I wouldn't know where that was coming or going half the time.
Yeah. What's my role? Chief motivator or enforcer?
Bum tapper.
Yeah.
Bum tapper. But I'm bum tap.
Yeah.
Hey, well, listen, Lou, thanks for picking up the phone. Finally, we get a good connection. And we get you on. I mean, people don't know or need to know. It's taken like 4 attempts to get a clear line. But loving what you've done with your room. Loving the memorabilia.
I sat here on purpose. I've altered this chair to have a backdrop just in case you saw me.
But good luck now with everything going on, and I'm sure we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, thanks. Cheers, Luke. Appreciate having you. Bye bye.
Keep going, mate. Ta-ra.
Keep Cheers, being you, all right? Don't change for anyone.
Give us a pep talk, yeah? Bye. Hambo, hello. Thanks for coming on our podcast. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, not bad at all, thanks. It's been a obviously strange scenario for everybody at the moment, but I'm very fortunate to live in rural Leicestershire and have a garden that I can get out and about to. So yeah, very fortunate in that way. So it's not been bad at all, really.
I'm interested to know how lockdown has been for you, but also for business, because of course you spend a lot of time raising a lot of money for a lot of people that need it. So has it, of course, it's all, you know, all these things are relative, but has it sort of affected fundraising hugely?
Yeah, lockdowns. Lockdown for me has been a bit strange, a bit of an emotional roller coaster in the fact that you just don't know when it's going to end. And yeah, I think it's been like that for a lot of people. You feel, I also feel that a number of our beneficiaries are in a bit of a predicament, really, in the fact that they're obviously going to self-isolate, but they're also on their own. And to be on their own without any human interaction, it must be so, so difficult. And I do feel really, really sorry for them, and that they've obviously not been able to see people in the flesh. Obviously, we've got technology now, which has helped everybody. But yeah, I think that's a real hard scenario to be in, I think.
Hambo.
On your own and self-isolating on your own.
Hambo, it's Shanks here. People that might not know about what you do and what you've set up, can you just give them a little bit of a explanation as to what Get Busy Living does and what you're trying to achieve by it?
Yeah, so I was very fortunate when I had my accident back in 2005 to have a tremendous support from the rugby community. And I was very fortunate to have that support and wanted to keep the momentum going when I was in a position where I could start helping other people. So we set up the Matt Hampson Foundation, which supports young people seriously injured through sport. Not just rugby, and we basically set up the foundation, and it's evolved and moved on over the years, and the support that I've received, I'm just so lucky to still have that support and still have that backing from a lot of people, especially the rugby fraternity, really, and We basically got offered a very generous offer to have a old derelict aircraft hangar, and we turned it into the Get Busy Living Centre, where we can support people even more than what we did initially.
Yeah, from what I understand, I mean, you talk it up, Hambo, but it sounds like it might just be a bit of piss up there most days. So I imagine you're quite keen to get that reopened. Has that had to shut down the whole time, or is there partially open? Is there an opening coming?
Yeah, my liver's had a bit of a break. But yeah, it's really difficult because obviously our priority is to make sure that our beneficiaries are being looked after and make sure that they're not going to catch the virus or anything like that. But we also, I feel that we have like an obligation to keep in contact with our beneficiaries, because for a lot of them, it's a lifeline coming to the centre. The gym upstairs is really, really important, but the downstairs space is even more important, I feel, to have that social interaction and talk to people in a similar situation and share experiences.
You rely, I'd imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, on a lot of events to raise money, because at events people buy tables, you have speakers, auctions, raffles, a lot. With everything going on with COVID-19, how are you looking to sort of keep that fundraising going during times like this?
We're pretty fortunate, really. We're in pretty good shape compared to a lot of other charities. We had a massive fundraiser just before all this kicked off back in February, and we had a annual Six Nations dinner at Battersea Evolution, and we're supported by Eddie Jones and the England squad. So we're very fortunate that obviously we got the money in for that. We did have that money sort of earmarked for a hydrotherapy pool, but obviously that's had to go towards paying wages and supporting our beneficiaries. We're very fortunate that we got that money in, and we could have that money go towards paying wages and supporting our beneficiaries. So
am I right, Hambo, in thinking I'm interrupting you there, go on.
No, carry on.
I was going to say, was that the dinner at Battersea where Austin Healey had a really awkward Q&A with Eddie Jones?
Yeah, it was.
I wish I'd be there.
Outspoken as ever, and he put Eddie on the sort of on the back foot, really, which was slightly awkward, but I found it quite entertaining.
Are we saying that Austin won this one-on-one with Eddie Jones then, or was it? Or did Eddie come back and hammer Austin?
I don't know. I think Eddie just came back with his usual sort of his usual sort of dry wit, really. So
I don't know if it was a Hambo dinner. I don't know if it was one of your dinners, Hambo, but where Mark Durden-Smith genuinely felt like he was going to get filled in by Ellis Genge. I don't know if that was one of yours. That was at Battersea.
It was. And it was.
Yeah. And he took it a bit too far and Genji was going to deck him.
Well, I think you can get away with it because you're obviously a big old unit, but also you're an ex-rugby player.
And he's a wimp.
So you can sort of get away with it with a lot of the boys. You've obviously got that banter and that sort of camaraderie and you almost like earn your stripes to talk to people that way. But I don't think Mark Durden-Smith could really get away with it. And Ellis Genge just didn't want to talk to him. I thought he was going to fill him in the car park afterwards. So, it was a strange old one.
I wish he had.
Well, that could have been the end. It'd be great, wouldn't it?
Hambo, tell us about a little bit about your lockdown, right? Because mine and Shanks' lockdowns have looked sort of similar in that we have talked quite a lot about achieving things, but we've actually just watched loads of telly. Have you ended up being a Netflix addict or are you doing something more constructive with your time?
We've also been a McDonald's, by the way, just to let you know.
Yeah, Mackey D's as well.
I've completed Netflix. I've actually watched everything on there. It's difficult really because you want to be as productive as possible. Some days you just wake up and you really can't be arsed. I really do not want to do anything today. But you know, like I said, I'm very fortunate to have a garden and I can get out and about as much as possible. But It has been difficult for everybody, really. But, you know, I count myself in a very fortunate situation that I've got a care team and I've got a family around me. So, you know, even though we do get pissed off with each other.
We think rugby might be shown. Maybe July, maybe August. There's talk about games being shown in Wales now at the end of August and maybe the season starting October. Are you one of these guys that loves rugby still, or are you too busy, sort of consumed in your work and what you do? Have you missed rugby?
I do love rugby.
Yeah.
Obviously to watch it, but to me, it's not the be all and end all to me now. You see our beneficiaries, and you see people from sort of all walks of life and backgrounds and whatever, and it puts things in perspective, really, and I love rugby, love the lads, love the camaraderie and the banter around it. But you know, for me, it's not the be all and end all now. I think when I initially had my accident when I was 20 years old, I thought my life wasn't going to go on, I had to grow up very quickly, and a lot of my mates were still in that sort of bubble of rugby and still loving being a professional sportsman. And I think when you have a life-changing injury, it puts things into perspective and you do start to see, you know, outside of that bubble.
And Hambo, just so we can be completely open and honest here, mate, before we got you on live, I was slagging you off a bit for being a Leicester mute. I say slagging you off, you will take that as a compliment. But it's not. It's not meant as a compliment, all right, as long as you know that. But obviously, we love the Tigers. You love the Tigers. You're Tigers to the core. Are you confident that, you know, with Geordie there and with Borthas coming in, who's a legend and a man, you know, who's proved himself many, many times, are you confident the Tigers can get back to the glory days and get back to being, they're a massive club, but getting back to being the high performing team they were for such a long time?
Yeah, they can. It's just going to take a while, and I think the board need to be patient with Geordie, and Geordie's definitely the right man. He's Tigers through and through. The fans absolutely love him, the players love him. I don't think I know anyone who's got a bad word to say about Geordie. He's just such a great guy, and he's been a massive supporter of the foundation since day one, really. So yeah, I think he can definitely turn things around. He can definitely change things. It's just going to take a while. I really like Steve Borthwick. I've heard great things about him. I know that he's very, very thorough. He's obviously not a Tigers man, but I think he can sort of change the way things are being done. And I think sometimes it's great to have an outsider looking in, really, in that way. Rugby's changed a hell of a lot over the years, and I think you can't be like Cocker's in the way he used to be, in the fact that he used to like bollock into the lads and like just like lead by example. Not everybody is Richard Cockrell. Not everybody is an absolute psychopath.
Aunt Middleton.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's done an absolutely amazing job up in Edinburgh, and he's changed that around. But I think Geordie would do a great job, and I think Steve Borthwick will really complement everything that everything that Tigers sort of stand for, really, in the future, really. But they do need to be patient. I do think that Tigers Academy really struggled for quite a while, and that sort of production line ceased, and I think that has made a big difference to Tigers. And I think they also signed too many sort of journeymen, and I think now they've got the right guys in. They didn't look at the player rather than the actual person, and I think the person is massively important within any club, and they've got to sort of add to the team, but also sort of complement the team as well.
Yeah, I think you're right, Hambo, and I think as a commentator and a pundit and analyst, whatever you want to call us. You've got to be neutral, and every now and again someone pops up and it is really hard to be balanced about them, but you have to do it. The only person I've yet been worried about not doing well is Steve Borthwick, because I couldn't think more highly of him. I just couldn't. And I know him very well, and I couldn't think more highly of him. So I'm almost at the point where if things don't go right at Leicester with him there, I will automatically assume it's someone else's fault. So I've got to be careful, and I've got to make sure I do my homework. But he's so good at his job, such a good bloke. I think you've signed an absolute winner there, mate. And
I certainly like Bo, him. I certainly like him now that the scab's healed on his nose.
He
looks so less aggressive now, and like that scab.
Yeah, but mate, that blood was on my shorts for 10 years.
Yeah. Oh my god! But yeah, no, I agree.
But my thing is the outside of my right thigh. Yeah, I had an ear for 10 years, and Cos had his nose, but Bortha's blood was on the outside of my right thigh every week for about 10 years, and it just covered in it. Hambo, glad to hear lockdown's going well for you. Glad to hear the Hambo Foundation's in a good spot. I'm sure you can't wait to get events going, raise a load more cash for the people you help. I can't wait to be at some of those events. They're always great fun. Thanks so much for coming on, mate. You're a top man. Keep going, and I reckon we'll see you pretty soon. Oh boy, sir. Thanks very much, Hambo.
No worries. Good to talk as always. Cheers, guys.
Well done, Hambo. Keep chucking, Hambo. Ta-da, mate. Bye. That was nice, wasn't it? Two nice fellas.
Two lovely blokes, mate. It's the first time I've ever spoke to Matt Hampson. Obviously, I've spoken to a lot of the guys that work with him and for him, but never actually spoken to him.
He's great value. And,
He is great.
Proper Leicester mute. And what I always think is like about Hambo, I mean, I've done loads of stuff with Hambo over the years, and went to see him actually when he was first in hospital with Dave Barnes and Danny Grucott. We went up there and he was even on great form then, to be honest. But you never know how you're going to react to something like that. And you always hope that if something seismic like that happened in your life, you'd react amazingly. But I feel quite confident I wouldn't react as well as him. And you think, well... And it's not just like, well, get on with it. He has literally charged forward and made himself the most unbelievable bloke on behalf of other people. Like, it just, when you go to his dinners and you see the people he helps and they come and talk, like went to one of his events and this lad had had an accident and he couldn't walk. So he had robotic legs made for him. And unbelievable, right? Mm. So this guy's walking up on his robotic legs. But then he was a motocross rider and that was his passion. So they made him a specially adapted motocross bike, got him on, and he went motocross riding. It's unbelievable. Wow. Like everybody's place is like, you are joking me. So I got him on stage and said, mate, you've had one accident. Why do you want to? He goes, why do you want to? I said, why do you want to get back on a motorbike, for Christ's sake? He goes, well, can't get a lot worse, can it? Can't even feel it. I said, oh, brilliant. So it's kind of, and Hambo made all this happen. Like, wicked bloke.
Yeah.
Wicked bloke.
Oh, good. Well, I'm looking forward. I've had a couple of invites before to his dinner in the Battersea Pub, but I've just had other things on, which I can't get out of. So I do want to make it one day because they do sound like a great laugh.
Yeah, they're loose and they're perfect because they're massive nights out and you sit with great people and everyone gets drunk and everybody gives money because it's just like, oh my God, you can have it. Whatever I've got, you can have it. It's brilliant. Lou Reed, I wish I'd played with Lou Reed. He's like Chris Chesney, but funny, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I'd played with him. What a fun bloke.
Yeah. Although we didn't want us to see his face. I mean, we went through loads of technical issues with him, with his phone. But eventually we found FaceTime audio worked. But wasn't confident enough to look us in the eye, was he?
Not a bad looking bloke, actually. So it's not like he's some sort of freak show.
No, it's not like he belongs on The Greatest Showman. Although he'd probably get a part.
But. He was, you know, decent looking bloke. I thought he looked very well, actually. But there's something not right there. He wouldn't look us in the eye. But I kind of like that. Someone who's a little bit off centre. Very funny. I enjoyed him.
Oh,
well done, Shanko, for sourcing him. Your Welsh mate.
Another one for us to have a beer with after. We're going to, you know, this beer group is getting quite high.
Yeah, I know.
Jason Fox, Bubbins, Mike Bubbins, Steve Spears, Chris Hoy. Well, they probably have a shake. Lou Reed. Anyone else?
The list is growing. Gary Powell, I think I'm having a beer with afterwards.
Rory Bremner, the impressions. I wonder what his impression of me would be like.
Bruce Springsteen wants a beer afterwards. It's going off, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, well, I think we'll probably do another pod next week, won't we? We'll have to have an off season. We'll have to have an off season, recharge the batteries, you know what it's like, and maybe just have something to talk about. Because at the moment, there's zip going on in our lives.
Yeah, correct.
Apart from Fastball on Amazon Prime, it's really good. It's about the fastest fastball thrown in baseball.
Okay, I'll watch that. By the way, while I've been up here, I heard the recycling lorry come along, realised I'd missed it, but we were talking to Lou Reed, realised I've forgot to put the recycling out, lost track of days. The bad news. The good news is I need to go to the tip, don't I?
Oh, a bit of time to yourself.
It's going to take me 4 hours.
I'm going tomorrow, mate. I had to book in, though, online, 8:30. So, big day for me as well.
Around here. Good luck to you.
Who doesn't love a tip run and going to the butchers?
Oh, yeah.
No man, anyway. Right.
Hey, or woman. I've got a charity bike ride tomorrow. I'll tell you what about it next week.
Okay.
All right.
Take care, Dave. Bye.
And ladies, well done, fella boy. Bye.